Well, I'll be in the nation's capital tomorrow and Sunday, speaking at the X conference as Stephen Bassett is attempting to push for disclosure, and some heavy hitter guests are going to be there, many coast to coast regulars as well, including Linda Moulton Howe. She'll be out there. George Knapp will be out there as well. If you're in that region, just go to x-conference.com and get the information on the X conference. A very informative news event. Most of it is going on at the National Press Club this year. And I hope we get some more national media to show up and start doing some quality programs on the need for disclosure. Even though, as I've told Steve, I don't think it's going to come from government. It's going to come from individuals who know things. So open lines continue. We'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We've got this new incredible system now that allows me, when I'm on location, to answer my phones, and it's got a clock with it. So if somebody's been on hold the longest, I know who he is or who she is, and I know what line they're on. That way, we don't miss them. You know, in the old days, you could theoretically miss a caller who was there for hours and hours. So we're going to the Demon line. Ron's in South Dakota, and he has been holding for 48 minutes and 53 seconds. There you go, Ron. Still with us?
All right, George.
There you go.
Say, I got a little outline for you of a couple of events that occurred in my life that can kind of lead into just an interesting little story.
Okay.
We'll start with there was reoccurring dreams I had as a child, and they kind of moved my consciousness to a basis, and like I was running down a tunnel. And down that tunnel, there was rocks, just huge boulders that were all around this tunnel, and they were always coming at me. And I was going down this tunnel and constantly being told, there is no escape, there is no escape, right? And then with that, a great sense of overwhelming fear just penetrated into my consciousness. And then at the same time, a small voice would rise, but I could never grasp that voice, which was that that it is not I that fears. Well, with that dream and that reoccurring dream over and over, sedimenting that into my consciousness. Then later I had several other dreams of that type of order that just kind of worked my consciousness around.
Kept tuning you up, didn't it?
Yeah, it kept tuning me into a specific framework of mind. Then I was about 11 years old, and I was actually practicing or kind of pretending to understand a little bit about like a Hindu type religion or something. And I was kind of trying to meditate and just trying to, you know, take control over my senses, my nerves, these types of things, and, you know, mm-hmm. gain a little focus of the individual self. And then I just drifted into, I don't know if I fell asleep or if I drifted into a secondary consciousness state, where again, now, but this was the most waking dream type of situation I ever had in my life, where I was just felt totally aware and alive. Well, there was a entity, I would say, and It was black, just a black face.
Like
it had no body connected to it, just a black face. Like a black hole face.
Yeah.
Okay? Had eyes, ethereal eyes, just kind of glowed, and a slight aura around the backside to know that there was an entity and give a definition, right? So with that, then this began to transfer thoughts into my mind. And, it's just a download, you know, as if it just plugged me in and started ramming me with its information it chose for me to know. Okay, and as soon as, you know, and I just amazed, my senses were lifted again. And, what it was telling me was just unbelievable to me. I can't get into that. But it just kind of raising my consciousness in a way. Then as soon as it had raised my consciousness, George, it kind of filled me with hope of what it was saying. then it from its eyes, from the presence of its eyes, from its mind, it was just like a lightning bolt ripped out into my consciousness again, just where I had been receiving information, and just burned into my brain and took everything it said it was revealing to me. And then it said, "Do you really think you're going to receive what we have to show you?" And it just, and as soon as it gained my trust, it just turned on me and burned me.
Pure evil, wasn't it?
Literally extended a lightning bolt of burn into my consciousness. Then with that, George, as it was departing, then I was just stricken with fear at this time. And then it said, "You will be me." It's what it said to me.
You know, as if just being
made into it. And it just heightening even again the concept of fear.
Did this want your soul, Ron?
Well, it sure seemed like it. It seemed like a soul-grabbing, different things that I've heard described on here, but it seemed like a soul-grabbing entity that totally locked its basis onto my mind's senses, observation, and seeing. Anyway, so with a variety of events, all these things transpired, and my mind was just melded into the senses of these memories. You know, I couldn't escape from them. And just like, living your life between two mirrors, all the memories, influences, stimuli that come into your life, they forge your mind into a consistently forged to a premise, an awareness. My consciousness was held in that same fear I experienced in that dream, and I just couldn't escape it, and I was always reaching for the stability of my own mind. Now, finally, after I'm 45 years old now, and now finally after all this time, I'm beginning to find myself on the shore of this sea of consciousness, can I say. Little bits of myself are starting to have faculty availability within this consciousness sense.
Well, what do you think this demon wanted with you? Because you sound like you learned from this experience.
Well, you learn from everything you go through. You experience what you've experienced. And as to know the mind of what its final determination is, I have no idea.
Maybe you will find that, Ron. Maybe just not yet, as they say. Let's take a few more other calls. Thanks, Ron. Let's go to South Carolina. Susan, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Mr. Norrie. It's a pleasure to speak with you. How are you tonight?
What's new in South Carolina?
Well, it's beautiful weather. The pollen has increased again.
It's that time.
Yes, sir. It certainly is. And I enjoy listening to you almost every night. And I go to bed early and wake up during the night and listen to you.
You're falling asleep as we speak.
Sir?
Are you falling asleep as we speak?
Oh, no, sir. I just don't speak very loudly. Should I speak up?
Yes.
Okay.
Because if you can't, we can't hear you.
Oh, let me turn the volume up, then. May I?
Well, let's see how loud you can turn it up.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's much better.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I always keep that. See, that's why when you call people on the phone, nobody knows what you're saying, I bet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Let's see, where was... Okay, we don't have much time, probably.
Probably.
But,
What'd you call for?
Maybe I should make it short, then.
Well, what'd you call for? There's a reason.
Okay, yes, sir, there is. My husband passed away first. He was wounded in the first Gulf War, and he passed away about a year later. And then my mother passed away 6 years later, and then my She passed away suddenly. And my father passed, and then I took care of my father.
You got a triple dose for a while.
Yes, sir. And then I took care of my father while I was working, and then I sold my business and took care of him for the last 2 years of his life, and he passed away in 2005. And the first time it began after my husband passed away, and he was like an angel. I was standing on the balcony at his parents' lake house, and he was coming up, floating up from the bottom like an angel, you know, with wings and everything. And he reached out to me to take his hand, and I did so. And when I did, he just took his hand back and just floated on up into the sky. And I've always had very pleasant dreams of him. And then after my mother passed away, the phone started ringing, and I would run down the hallway to answer the phone, and no one was there. But I knew it was my mother calling.
No wonder you've always had the volume on low. You probably didn't want that thing to hear you.
But that's just been since my dad passed away. But this continued on, you know, with my dad living here. And I live in their house now, even though we had our own house. But he wanted to live in their house.
Right.
But anyway, I won't go into, I'd get too emotional if I told you what happened before my daddy passed away. I'll fast speed ahead and tell you what happened in the last year is that my parents started visiting me while I would be sleeping, and I'd wake up and they would be in the room. I mean, I'd sit up in the bed because they'd tug at me, or I'd wake up, and the last time I woke up, I sat up straight in the bed, and my mother was lying to the left of me. I mean, it just shocked me, really.
Those things happen, though, Susan.
And before that, I was lying to the left on my right side, and I usually lie on my left side, and someone was tapping me on the shoulder, and I was wondering, what in the world? You know, and I looked over my shoulder, and there was my mother tapping my shoulder, and I was wide awake. And, you know, I just raised it, and I said, Mama, and she just went away. And I hear her moving boxes all the time in the attic. She used to do that all the time while she was living.
Just shuffling them back and forth.
Huh? Yes, or looking for things.
So she's still up there looking.
She's not.
She stopped?
She has not been in the last month. They stopped doing it.
Why? Why
stopped coming in here and stopped doing it in the last month. I started having real bad seizures they started over a year ago, and they got even worse last month.
You getting some help for that?
Yes, sir. I've been being treated, and I've gotten better. And
that's good. But they've stopped. They've stopped trying to see. You think the seizures have something to do with that?
To do with stopping.
With their visitations?
I don't know. I want them to come back and visit me, though. I miss that.
I'm sure you do.
I'm by myself.
Well, maybe they will. See, maybe also, though, Susan, they wanted you to know that everything's okay on their end.
Well, I know they are, because they're Christians, and I'm a Christian. I mean, my parents reared me to be a Christian, and I've been a Christian since I was 9 years old, and I was a child of the covenant. I was,
well,
you know.
I think what probably happened, Susan, is they moved on, and they figure, you know what, they're okay, and they needed you to do that, even though you miss them. There's no doubt about that. You know, people who get visitations end up liking them from their loved ones. And, you know, it just, but feel good about the fact that they have probably moved on. Let's go to Mitch in Wisconsin. Hey, Mitch, welcome to the show.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I wanted to comment about this black triangle. I was an active duty Marine from 92 to 96.
Ah.
And in 95, I was at 29 Palms, California. And there was one particular night where I was out in the field with a record driver, and this aircraft or whatever it is, it had flown over us. It was pretty amazing. What I can tell you is that it was probably no more than 1,000 feet in the air, roughly the size of a football field.
Yep, that's
and it.
It
was completely silent. And I've heard other people call into your show, and they describe it exactly to a T, what I've seen, and it's just amazing to me. And I dismissed it at the time, but I just want to say, for me, there's no question that it's an aircraft. I think it's probably one of ours. And
I hope it's one of ours.
Yeah, no doubt. But what's interesting is the resources and the technology it took to develop this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are, 2010, we're still trying to cure cancer and, you know, other things like that. But yet we have this technology available.
Did it have one of those false star patterns on the bottom of it? So when you were looking up at it, in some cases, it looked like you were looking at stars?
No, actually, it was real similar to what one of your prior callers tonight had said. It was just completely black, and it was really hard to see. But you could see the outline of the craft just because it was blocking out the stars above it.
All right, and it was silent? Could you hear something?
Completely silent. And it was just amazing because it moved so slow, and with relation to the size of this thing, it should have just dropped right out of the sky, and it didn't.
So I think it's anti-gravity. What do you think?
I totally agree. And like I said, the resources it took to build this, is I can't even fathom. But, I'd be great to hear you guys do a show on this sometime.
Yeah, we've done some more.
It's really interesting.
Might be time to revisit it again. I think there must be 3 to 5 of them stationed in strategic spots around the country based on the calls that we get. I don't think it's the same object. I think they're all over the place. What are they? Transport devices, maybe. The fact that they're very close next to military bases in this country leads me to believe that they're ours and that they're hidden away. I guess we could think they were extraterrestrial as well, coming by military bases. You can't rule that out. But I tend to think that this might be our technology. Open lines continue in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So I'll be right back with calls in Illinois, Michigan, Alabama, Wisconsin, Alaska, Portland, Oregon, and more. On Coast to Coast AM. Don't forget, Ian Punnett, Saturday and Sunday here on Coast to Coast AM. And this is a glimpse of the week ahead. Stan Gordon joins me on Monday night show as we talk about Bigfoot and other crypto topics. We haven't done that in a long time, so I'm looking forward to talking with Stan about that. Sir Charles Schulz III joins us. We'll talk a little bit about Mars and bacterial life there. On our Wednesday program, Dr. Marvin Hausman joins us. He is an expert in cellular medicine. Wait till you hear what he has to say. Thursday, Christopher and Philip Booth join us. They are documentary filmmakers. They'll be talking about their work on the true story behind the movie The Exorcist and other possessions. And then we're back to Friday open lines again on Coast to Coast AM. And I'll be back with your calls in just a moment. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Coast. Hope you have a great weekend. And don't forget to join us all this weekend for live Coast to Coast shows. And then we'll be back again on Monday night with me, So let's go back to the calls. David in Anchorage, Alaska. It's your turn, David. Hi.
Hi, George. I've called the show several times, always talking about science things and suppressed technologies.
Okay. Yeah.
But he had the demon thing on, and I don't know why, but I gave it a shot, and lo and behold, it rang through. And so I thought, well, I guess I'm stuck revealing this stuff.
Okay.
So anyway, when I was a kid, I used to have reoccurring dreams similar to what that gentleman was talking about earlier. Absolute helplessness in a game where the time was going to run out and I was going to be trapped eternally in this hellish-like place.
Oh, God, a labyrinth of horror.
And I was very young at the time, and it was terrifying. And I wouldn't remember the dream, but I would sort of remember it. I would never really remembered it until the last time I had it. I had a very high fever, probably about 104. And these things were there. And I realized they were evil, and they hated God. And there was something inside of me, like a switch, just tripped. And they hated God. And
you okay?
Yeah, I'm just emotional. I don't tell anybody this thing. And so I went after these things. And I actually had to fight them by fighting them faster than time. And I beat them. But during this dream, all the curtains all over the house were torn from the walls. Pictures were thrown from the walls.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the foot of the bed, wrapped in my bedclothes, just literally tied into them like a knot. So it certainly wasn't me. And my father came into the room in the middle of the night. What in the world is going on in the house? And I told him that I'd beat them. Well, what also happened at the time, he just said, "Go to bed. You're delusional, you're sick," and went back to bed, but my fever had broken. I went from 104 fever to nothing.
How did you beat him, David?
Well, it was by beating him faster than time. And it wasn't with the help of God.
Well, they explain that, though. I'm confused.
I had to hit them twice. Because every time I would hit them, they would split into two.
So and there'd be more and more, yeah.
More and more. And so I had to hit them twice before I could hit. In a child's mind, I can't really say. It was just faster than time itself. They were hit twice before the one time. And it literally went as if I was traveling faster than the speed of light doing this.
Tell me why this has been so emotional for you.
Well, it was a few years later, about a year later, that I had another dream. And I was brought into the presence of God in this dream. And that reason was because I'd cut a covenant with God by doing that. Your guest talked about different types of covenants, and that was a covenant being a friend of God. It's not the same as being the adopted child of God as a Christian. It's more in the lines of Abraham. I didn't understand this. Abraham was a friend of God.
You're a little boy at the time. You're not going to understand it. You're not supposed to.
Well, I also didn't understand the Bible. I had never read the Bible. And even though we were going to church, it was something to sit through. And it was not very deep into the Bible, the church itself that I went to.
Did this event, David, change your life?
It very much did. That second dream gave me a really deep understanding into things. There's still to this day times that I... when I was going to college, even the teachers were pretty amazed at the knowledge that I had about different things. And I could have called the teacher 20 years after I'd left their class, and they would still remember who I was.
I mean, I distinctly remember a few of your calls on science issues, and I mean, you talk like you've got a PhD in science.
Well, I don't. It's just stuff that I've learned on my own. But there's also, I would like to talk to you sometime about some of the stuff that I know about suppressed technologies.
All right, why don't you do this for me, David, because we've got so many calls and not enough time. I want you to send me an email a little bit more, because I'm not quite sure you're finished with what might have happened to you. I just want to get your thoughts a little bit more on that. George@coasttocoastam.com, if you would. Just like to hear a little bit more about this. And I'm glad you were able to do this. It does sound very emotional to you. Let's go to Anonymous in Missouri. Uh-oh, why are we anonymous?
Well,
because you don't want us to know your name, that's all.
for one reason, I believe that that the demons are mimicking the Greys. I believe that the Greys are actually being created by demons as a part biological, part mechanical suit or body, if you will, that they can inhabit to come into this plane.
There are some experts on our show, Anonymous, who say the same thing. You're not alone in that.
And that that's one reason that Stephen Hawking said not to ask them to be friends. And it's what scares me that the Pope says that they are our brothers. I think that it's been infiltrated, and that they are not aware of what they're saying.
Well, there
and
are,
we should not invite them as our friends.
And you agree with that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot. I'm getting, you know, one of the things I'll bring up at the X conference in Washington D.C. tomorrow and Sunday is this very subject on whether these are demonic forces or not. I find that fascinating. That so many incredible guests with credentials longer than mine believe that they're demons. Lester is in Illinois. Hey, Lester, go ahead.
Hi there.
Welcome to the show.
The story I got to tell you is about my father.
Okay.
He had an aneurysm. He went into the hospital. Well, they gave him medicine, blood thinner, and he come back to the hospital. They took him off the blood thinner, and it caused him to go partially on one side, I forgot the name of it, where he was
partially paralyzed?
Paralyzed on one side. So I went down and visited him and told him, if there's any way I can help you pass over, or if you get scared, you let me know somehow. So this happened about a month ago. I went to bed after listening to you about 4:30. At about 5 o'clock, I had a dream. I see a pair of arms. They reached around and grabbed my wrist, and I grabbed the hand's wrist in my dream. So it started pulling me. Well, it didn't feel right. If my dad would have wanted help passing over, I would have saw him and I would have talked to him. It didn't feel right. So I got upset, was screaming, got up crying. Come to the front room, and about 20 minutes later, my stepmother, I live in Illinois, they lived in Kentucky, and 20 minutes later, my stepmother calls me, your father's dead. I go, okay. So the moral of the story is, that wasn't my dad. It didn't feel right. It was evil. And seeing how that was the topic of your story tonight, thought I'd tell you my story and let the people out there at Coast to Coast, let them know what the dream I had. It was just, I've had dreams about the 9/11 and so forth, and that was the worst dream I've ever had in my life.
I bet.
Then waking up and getting a phone call from my stepmother tell me that my dad was dead. It's just that was my story right there. So,
all right, thanks for sharing that, Lester.
All right, thank you, George.
Okay, that's it's not easy sharing some of these emotional stories, is it? As indicative of some of the calls tonight. Let's go to Paul in Michigan. Whereabouts in Michigan are you, Paul?
Hey, I'm up in the Upper Peninsula, George.
Way up there. How are you?
Yeah. Oh, I'm doing well, doing well. Thanks for taking my call.
The movie Somewhere in Time was filmed up there, remember?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, a long time ago.
So the reason I'm calling tonight, I want to kind of switch gears away from the negative vibes. I have some concerns about this up-and-coming energy crisis we have with this oil spill.
Me too.
And I'm trying to be a part of the solution and not a part of the problem.
What do you think we can do about it? Because I don't think the experts know.
Well, I think that Catherine Austin Fitz and David Bloom and a lot of the other guests that you've had on have already offered us a solution. I mean, as far as ecological disaster goes, there's never going to be a winner politically.
No, not at all.
But I think one of the things we need to do is focus on our local farms, you know.
Well, I think so, too, and I don't think we should be doing any more offshore oil drilling at all. And we need to we've got the know-how. We got the scientific smarts, Paul, as you know. We can get on alternative fuels if we wanted to. I just don't think we want to, Paul. Do you?
No, I really don't.
No.
But, you know, I think that with any major problem, you know, there's an old expression, you can eat an elephant a bite at a time. And so I think, you know, if we start local and we go one town at a time and one state at a time, we can, you know, get through this muck and mire.
I just hope they can get this thing capped.
And I don't know how familiar you are with Michigan agriculture, but it's set up to be very agribusiness friendly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was born in Michigan and had a little farm there myself.
It's very tough to get by as a small farmer. And
farmers can't make it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they've legislated it now to the point where you need a $30,000 processing facility to legally sell a jar of honey to your neighbor, you know.
Well, that's absolutely true. And when I say the small farmer can't make it, I don't mean he can't grow things for himself and his family. What I'm saying is commercially, they can't make enough money to really go out and survive and make their payments, their house payments, and things like that. They just they can't do that at all. I want to give you my email address. Those of you who want to email me, send it to me. That's george@coasttocoastam.com. Like I mentioned, I'll be at the X Conference this weekend speaking in Washington, D.C. They've still got a lot of seats left for the entire event. So come on out if you live in the area or if you want to make a little capital trip, pop up there too. I'll be on a plane in the morning myself. And then back in St. Louis for only one more week before I head back to Los Angeles again, and hopefully we'll dodge the earthquake once and for all. Here's UFO Phil.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling, Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century.
For Dan Galante, Jason King, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Tim Banal, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.